Welcome to Faith and Family on this Friday, September the 13th, 2013. Rod Zwanitzer, your temporary host for the last day here on Faith and Family. Looking forward to having regular host Andy Bates back here in the host seat next Monday, returning from being with his new baby boy, Oscar, and wife, Lauren. We look forward to having him back and seeing in the flesh all the baby pictures and maybe some cigars, huh, Buzz? Thanks be to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for this pivotal show, Faith and Family. For more information about them, Concordia University, CUW.edu, or you can find them as well on our website, KFUOAM.org. Look for the rotating sponsors' logos, and then when CUW comes up, Concordia University, Wisconsin, hit it. It'll take you right there. They have a great virtual tour. Find out all the information about the good things going on there at Concordia University, Wisconsin. We've been talking about back-to-school issues all this week. Today's topic is how to maintain a manageable household as the family returns to school schedules, especially extracurricular activities. If you have a question or comment for our guest about managing extracurricular activities, please call us 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Or you can email us at kfuo@kfuo.org. We welcome back a good friend of Worldwide KFUO and Faith and Family, Professor Ben Freudenberg. He's Professor of Family Life Ministry at Concordia University, Ann Arbor, Michigan. Welcome back to Faith and Family, Ben.
Well, it's my pleasure. Just congratulations to Andy. That's a great thing to have a new baby.
Isn't that just, we all know that miracle and the thrill, especially of having your first.
That is true. And I can remember that many years ago.
Me too.
It was a great time. And just a special time to thank God for all the blessings that those new children bring into our lives.
I remember fondly. Now, it wasn't so fond then, but somebody took a snapshot of me in the father's waiting room with my head between my legs and a bottle of Pepto-Bismol there. So,
fathers have trauma too, you know.
We do. We have that shared trauma just to help our wife with the load. So
exactly, yeah. I just want to bring you greetings from Concordia University Ann Arbor and the Family Life Program. You know, we've merged with Concordia University, Wisconsin, so we're kind of brothers and sisters all together now, trying to shape the next generation for service to the world and to the church.
That's wonderful. And as you probably are more aware than a lot of us, Ben, the family is really in trouble, and you for decades now have been doing some great things trying to right that ship. And, you know, it seems in today's world, I would venture to say families don't spend a lot of good quality time together. Could we say not as much as they probably should, and not as much as if they did? It would be grateful to all the family members and beneficial.
Yeah, well, what I found through my research and from my own personal struggles is that quality time with your family comes out of quantity. We can't just all of a sudden say we're going to have quality time in the next 10 minutes. Let's get to it, you know. So it's just about being in relationship with each other and deliberately spending quantities of time so that the quality kind of comes out of that time together. And busy schedules in our culture today, it seems like we get awards for being the busiest person on the block, and everybody's patting us on the back for how many activities our kids are in and how many school things they're doing, church things they're doing. And maybe that's sending the wrong message.
You bring up a good point there that maybe we're our own worst enemies, as they say, that we almost applaud people that are overrun with too much activities and not enough for the most salient things, which is some quality family time itself. Now,
well, and I hear young people really, really asking for more heart-to-heart, eye-to-eye, ear-to-ear time with mom and dad. I really hear my students, even at the university, kind of wondering why that didn't happen in their own families.
I saw a great sign the other day. It was a restaurant in Germany that I saw on Facebook that had a sign in English for some reason. It said, no Wi-Fi, so talk amongst yourselves.
Well, that's great. Well, and it's really interesting, isn't it, at the social media and the digital world. We have more and more ways to communicate and spend time with each other, but we do less and less of it. So
now, before we get into the negative side, let's do some positive side. Are there benefits in your mind, Professor Freudenberg, for extracurricular activities for our children, especially?
Oh, absolutely. We're all products of good coaches and good piano teachers and good dance teachers and those extra trips that we've taken with the 4-H. I mean, all those things just are bonuses, and they sometimes are the life shapers of our children. So there's tons of benefits, leadership skills that are translated from good athletic programs, good music endeavors, and raising our aptitude if God's gifted us with that. The marching band can be an awesome experience, not only in high school but college, and can shape who we become. So, yeah, those are extracurricular activities are really exciting and important pieces of the development of a child's life.
It seems, too, that so many people that you're describing there, their character is shaped by the whole, you know, educational curriculum. And so the extracurricular outside of the normal subject matter, you know, before and after school and weekends, shapes a lot of these kids, and they seem to develop a lot of their image of themselves through their success or their failure in those extracurricular activities, because some of them seem to be an extension of their school life, you know, that some of the more brainy kids, I know in my school, they were on the debate team, they were in various leadership clubs and activities. And
now it's robotics.
Yeah.
There's these wonderful opportunities for our young people. And just think of all the wonderful programs in our churches that include like high school and junior high and children, and it takes them outside, you know, of their academic careers. But how many of those have gone into church work because they had this influencer, this children's minister or youth minister that impacted their life, and now they find God calling them into that career? So, you know, those are all great benefits.
So how does the family help young people find the right mix of extracurricular activities for their children?
It's balance. Everything in family life is balance. Not being overdone on either side. You know, not enough extracurricular activities is not good, and too much extracurricular activities are not good. So it's this balance. How do you find the balance in our Christian and our family life so that, you know, you begin to know you're out of balance in extracurricular life when you begin complaining as the parent that all I'm doing is running my kids to this thing and that thing, or when all of a sudden a schedule gets changed and I begin to get blameful, you know, and I start to get angry that my schedule had to change because of this change in this extracurricular activity schedule. So when the balance gets out of sync, there are warning signs that families begin to realize that something's wrong, right? Have you ever experienced that?
Absolutely. And I think you're saying two huge concepts here Ben, if I might point them out, balance and then warning signs. Two important things in today's topic of managing extracurricular activity, that balances, and sometimes it does take some experimentation, would you say, to find balance? Because that's going to vary maybe from person to person, family to family.
Well, absolutely, and it's the number of, every child is different, right? Some children can handle two or three, and the balance is fine, where another child might only be able to handle one, and then that's the fine balance. So it's not even family by family, it's individual child by individual child. My grandchildren and my own children now struggle with that. They're all just beginning their early elementary life, and the conversation at the beginning of school is, how many activities do I allow my child to go to today? And they'll call grandma or grandpa and say, well, what would you do? And I guess I tell them that, you know, it's about individual. I don't think there's any one rule that fits all kids. And it's about balance. And not only that for the child, but how much can your family schedule, your corporate family schedule, take before it's on overload?
Yeah, so there's a lot of important factors that you're throwing out for families to consider, the family load and stress, the individual load and stress, and then what's best for all of those. You know, would you also throw into that mix that, you know, sometimes I know these kids that are just so active all of their waking day that you look at them, and especially in the morning, they're worn out. They've probably had too much on their plate the day before. And so to get all that in after school and before school and then school and get some rest and have time for friends and all the other things, they do look really stressed and tired. So that for sure would be a warning sign that maybe there's a need to relook at the load.
Right. Tiredness, grumpiness, irritable, you know, those are all signs that we're just running on empty and our tank needs to be full. You know, we need to take a break and reorganize and rethink what kind of a load we're trying to bear here. And it's really, why are we so concerned? What's the concern that we're talking about here? Is it harmful when a child has too much? Does it hurt the family system when there's too much going on, when we're overloaded? And what are the outcomes of not taking appropriate steps? What you're indicating is that there are some negative things, not only in the child's life, but it begins to affect our family life and everybody in the family, even if one person is overloaded. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a good point, that even if one family member is overloaded because of someone else's curricular load, I don't think that's fair. We used to have I just think it was kind of a unique system. I hadn't heard anyone else doing it, but on our refrigerator, my dad and mom had a daily routine tracker for each one of the kids and for them. And I can remember my dad telling me very specific that I had duties at the household because he had his own business. And we were, as we got older, I had our little tasks to help him out as well. And every day we had to tick those off. And then some household chores to help mom, and then our own, you know, bedroom cleaning and all of that. And boy, if we didn't have those consistently checked, and our grades were not in line, and church activities, especially confirmation and Sunday school and all that, that was my dad's priorities. And it was never. You could get away with it maybe once in a while. You know, Dad, I've got a tournament and this or a special activity over here. Every now and then he was flexible with that, but not on any consistency. And if you didn't get those primary things down and checked, and that was his way of monitoring all the family, you just had to find balance because he stressed those.
What I'm saying is that we as the parents, we're finally the ones that have to be responsible, right?
We have to be the arbiters of all the balance in the household, don't we?
That's right. And so now we're talking about who's responsible and what's our model or method to helping our family understand every time we make a choice, there's a response that happens, okay? And how do we make the right choices so that our family stays within that balance we've been talking about, and so that the school academics don't get cheated, or the church work, the spiritual life doesn't get cheated, or our relationships with each other don't get cheated, and don't forget grandma and grandpa, they would like some time too. and that the chores of the house have to get done. And so what I kind of observe a lot in today's families are that we've kind of focused mostly on the extracurricular activities at the expense of some of the other necessities that are important in healthy family living.
You know, how much of this, too, Ben, and I think we're zeroing in on an important factor as you're describing it here, is, you know, who's in charge of this balance? And it has to be the parents to lead and to arbitrate this, that I've seen too many parents who, for whatever reasons, they kind of want to live through their children's extracurricular activities. I know it was really difficult for me because I was into a lot of sports and did fairly well there when my daughter had no interest at all in that. And she wasn't real adept at it, but she liked other things. She liked drama. She liked dance, which I had no idea of that world. But what I found was that was playing to her, receipt of God's gifts, and that she found joy there, and that's what I wanted. So, you know,
I think you're absolutely right.
I think sometimes the parents want to live almost, vicariously through their children. And you know, we know that can play all kinds of problems. And I think no more so, would you say, than the pressure that's on the child to please that parent.
Yeah, I think you're really hitting on something that's just so important to understand, that really what we're trying to do as parents is to discover the gifts in our own children and then to help them develop those gifts to be a positive impact to the world and to their neighbors and to their families. And so, if we aren't being real attentive and we're living kind of selfishly and vicariously through our children, that's probably one of those warning signs. And sometimes we don't even realize it, you know. And the other thing I think happens, maybe even more than trying to live through our kids, is that it's become a cultural norm that what really is important, what becomes a measure of good parenting is, you know, how I'm giving my children these wonderful opportunities to grow, right? And so the more I give my kids these opportunities to grow, the better parent I am. And that's kind of become what the culture is identifying as good parenting, right? And so it's not that the parents are deliberately failing here or doing something inappropriate. It's what the culture has kind of demanded of the parent today. You know, you be in the sports, be in the dance, be in sports, dance, and music.
Yeah.
So, not
just be in those things sometimes, but be very successful at them.
I mean, you know, a third grade home run hitter. You know?
Or, you know, I'm not near this at all, and I never, I just couldn't bring myself to watch it, but I saw the promos for these young girls at young age doing beauty queens, and the pressure and the fighting among the moms for the competition there, and I thought, to me, this is the total wrong view we should be giving our young people of what extracurricular activities should be about. It should be friendship and the sportsmanship and all of that. And you know, while we're maybe putting up some negative ones, there's some real positive ones too. And I had the privilege of one of the neatest things I've ever did in my adult life. Been when I was in college, a buddy asked me to be a little league coach with a team, a group of young boys that had never won a game the year before. And so I had a great time doing it. And all of a sudden, this dad pulls up one night, and he tells me that his son has some learning disabilities, and he doesn't expect me to ever play him, but he would like his son to have that experience. And I'm like, well, God bless you. You know, this is great. And so I played this kid, and I heard unbelievable, mean, vicious things from the other parents about how dare you jeopardize, you know, the team's record by playing this young man. And I told them flat out, you know, you've got the wrong guy as your coach of your son's team, because I agree with that dad that we're going to try to win, but we're not going to win at all costs. And I'm wondering, we seem to have that underlying presupposition in America that you know, winning is the only thing. We hear that kind of stuff. The only positive for being in sports competition or any kind of competition, it seems, is first place. Second place or any of the rest is to be abhorred in our country. And you know, I really didn't grow up with that. I grew up with you gave it your best, but not at the cost of some more important things. And
Isn't it great that in Christ's eyes we are in first place?
Yeah, we've already won. You know, it's like
we've won the victory.
Yeah, and, more than conquerors. You know, I love that. And so, you know, even with this young man that really didn't have a lot of skills, we tried to develop whatever skills God had given him, and he could do some things, but not real well. I remember one of the wildest ones is I put him in center field, where I didn't think in that league anybody could really get, but they had a ground ball out to him, and we taught him that your job is never let the ball get past you. Well, he took that too literally, and he stopped it, and then he pounced on it kind of in a fetal position and would not let his teammates get the ball out from under him as the base runners were rounding the bases. You know, kids were yelling at him, and I stopped him and said, come over and said, let's pat him on the back, because he did a good job, didn't he? Didn't I tell? Job one is not let the ball get past you. And then the other kids caught that, and we all applauded and kind of patted the kid on the back. And we caught some flack for that. But I think we've lost a lot in America, that, you know, the only good competitor is the one who excels and gets a scholarship and all-star team and all that. And now I don't think that's it. And I think extracurricular of all sorts should try to be at the highest level, but also teach our kids, all kids, you know, to develop the God-given gifts, give it their best, and then support each other in that.
Yeah, what I hear you saying is that maybe it's time to put away and stop counting the trophies,
yeah,
or the blue ribbons, the number of scholarships that are given by any particular school, or the dance awards, and really begin to think about what are the impact that our behavior, our activity through these different activities are having on our children, and to really take an assessment of what the power of those activities are, and is that power going in a negative or a positive direction? And you know what it really starts with is what is our goal and our mission.
And I think then we're talking about that parents and children should probably monitor these closely together, talk about them as the benefit and learning experiences, and let's pick that up. How much time should parents and their kids spend talking about extracurricular activities? When we come back here on Faith and Family with Professor Ben Freudenberg, Family Life Ministry at Concordia University Ann Arbor, here on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of Inspiration in Action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Sherry and Phil Boas will tell you they're blessed, and with good reason. All of their four adopted children were meant to be aborted. The oldest was born to a crack addict who went in for an abortion but changed her mind at the last minute. The second had a birth mother who wanted an abortion but couldn't afford it. The third was conceived in rape and has Down syndrome and also nearly aborted. The fourth's birth mother was looking for a late-term abortion mill when the baby was unexpectedly born prematurely at 25 weeks. Sherry and Phil's story is proof. There's no such thing as an unwanted child. Every child, even those with special needs, would be welcome in thousands of homes across the nation. Actually, Sherry and Phil aren't that unusual.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
Hi, I'm Tom Baker, regular host of Law and Gospel, inviting you to tune into the program for a discussion of what benefits you receive from Jesus Christ each and every day. Law may tell you what you are supposed to do, but the gospel reveals how your failure in doing the law is fulfilled by God Himself.
Weekdays at 2 p.m. on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Life insurance from Thrivent Financial for Lutherans is all about living. It's about enjoying every moment because you know your family's tomorrow is taken care of. It's about enjoying that extra sense of comfort because you took an extra step to protect the ones you love. September is Life Insurance Awareness Month. For information, call your local Thrivent Financial representative today. Registered representatives for securities offered through Thrivent Investment Management Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
Finders, keepers. When it's Jesus doing the looking and we sinners being found, brought home, there's no better news for lost sheep like you and me. In fact, it's worth rejoicing about.
Pastor Gregory Seltz, this week on The Lutheran Hour.
Sundays at 12:30 and 5 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
U.S. Solicitor General Donald Verrilli says employer challenges to the health care law's birth control mandate will likely be decided in the Supreme Court term that begins next month. Dozens of employers have said that providing contraceptive coverage would violate their religious beliefs. In a panel discussion Thursday, Verrilli predicted the case could hinge on the justice's interpretation of a federal law that says
government shall not substantially burden a person's exercise of religion unless the government has a compelling interest and the burden imposed is the least restrictive means of achieving that interest.
Verrilli says at issue is whether corporations have religious rights, whether the burden on them is substantial, whether government has a compelling interest in making contraceptives available, and whether the mandate is the least restrictive means of doing so. Lower courts have issued conflicting rulings, with some blocking enforcement of the mandate until the issues are decided. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family, the show where you can get some good expert advice on two of the most foundational things in our world, faith and family, and put those together. And that is the backbone of the world and Christ Church. To help us today, talking about that foundation with managing extracurricular activities for family life is Professor Ben Freudenberg, Family Life Ministry at Concordia University, Ann Arbor, Michigan. You can join us with your comments, your questions for Ben on extracurricular activity by calling us at 314-821-0850. That's in the greater St. Louis area. And worldwide, 800-730-2727. Or by email, kfuo at kfuo.org. You know, I don't think in today's world that families spend enough quality time together. What might a family do to even begin that, Ben? And with so much, how might they, you know, sketch out, carve out some time where they could sit down and really start to be the family that God would want them to be?
I really think what I try to help families to do that I work with is it starts with the family mission statement. You know, a family mission statement is something that puts into words why our family exists. And once we begin to realize why our family exists, it's easier to say yes and no to things. And once we begin really focusing on attaining that mission as a Christian family, it begins to help us carve out what's important to us. And as I do that with families, and they begin to articulate what their mission is as family, and then they begin to put up together their activity schedules and their plans that reflect that, they begin adding quality time because it becomes part of what they want to be about as families. So I really think one of the ways the church can really help families is by helping them understand why God put them on earth and made them a family in the first place.
Well said. Now, what are your thoughts? What are some of the more important things that should be in that family mission statement for a family to consider?
Well, I think there, as a Christian family, it's a little different. And we really want to focus on first about faith. You know, one of my missions for our family is to help our kids mature in the faith that they were given at their baptism. And so what am I deliberately doing to reach that part of our mission? The second thing that Christians really want to be thinking about as part of their mission statement for their family is service to the world. What am I doing for my neighbor? How can I actually help my family have servant eyes? And am I deliberately planning and devising and setting aside time? And, you know, service to the world can be a lot of fun. It doesn't have to be a chore. It could be taking and helping the family next door by delivering some cookies because dad is at home alone with the rest of the kids because mom's in the hospital with a new baby. So how do we deliberately have create service eyes and servant hearts in our children? And the third thing, I think, is how do we become and shape our family for witness to the world? You know, mercy and justice. How do we help our families begin to have those kind of eyes? And when I begin to help families shape their mission statement and ask them about faith development, service to the world, and witness to the world, and they begin crafting that statement that they put on their refrigerator, and they begin making sure that the activities they're doing are in line with their mission, it really begins to add some new dimensions to the way they spend time together.
That is an excellent proposal that you're throwing out there for all of us to consider, that God did create the family for those very important things, to be a place of where he can take care of them as a biological family that grows in their trust and faith in him, and then take that love that he has for all humans out to the world in mercy and acts of graciousness and in witness life too. I know when I served at a parish in the Detroit area, one of our missions at the congregation there was once a month we went to inner city Detroit at a big rescue mission, and we put on a whole meal and then some other things. And a lot of families would insist they bring their kids and make them take part, which was, you know, interesting to watch because, you know, the kids at first are very uptight, very nervous about it. But you could see after a while they were touched.
And, well, and you know, it works the other way, too. A lot of times we call them the draggies. The kids drag their parents who are uptight and nervous.
Ooh, good point.
And the reality is it works both ways. And you know, I think for the church, by helping the members of families, the household leaders, begin developing mission statements, it helps them regain control of their family's lives. I mean, so often our families are out of control because they're living out everybody else's mission statements. You know, the coach's mission statement, the school's mission statement, the boss's mission statement, the Little League's mission statement. And we, by default, get sucked in to everybody else's plans for us.
So well said.
The church can do a great favor to families as they have these little workshops and they get families together and organize a little event where they begin helping families think about why God has placed them on the earth. I know for us, the Freudenberg family, we did this with our girls when they were little, and we designed it and then we took it to them and they helped us kind of think it through, and it became our mission statement. And it was about service to the world, growing in faith. But we wanted to also be a harbor of safety for those in trouble. And this is an amazing story. I was speaking out in the community away from my family, and this was when my girls were in high school, and a knock came at the door from one of the kids in the youth group who were in trouble. And of course, they called us first, and we said, well, no, you really shouldn't. You shouldn't invite them in, have them stay out there. You're home alone. And then they remind us, well, Dad, our mission is to be a harbor of safety for people in the world. And so yeah. What that said to us is, wow, it really worked. By understanding why God put us here and by talking about it as family and putting it up on the refrigerator, it actually made a difference about the decisions we were making in our life.
I love that. Right. And especially, Ben, you were saying, and your daughters there were echoing that we're not going to let someone else define our family mission statement. It's ours, and we need to do it.
Yeah, we need to do it. Of course, when the story goes on, we don't have to go there, but they were able in a safe way to provide safety and help for that person at the door with us being gone. We talked them through it. And that was great. But the real observation is that the church has this opportunity to partner with families to regain control in this hectic, chaotic, busy life by doing a simple activity. And what's the reason? It's because at church, we're in fear that we're scheduling nurturing faith right out of our lives. Isn't that the fear?
It sure is. I mean, and that's the danger we're trying to guard against. And too many times we don't keep that in the forefront.
And so what we discovered is, as that became one of our kind of issues, how do we help families in stay connected to Christ, and how do we help nurture their faith? One of the things we wanted to do is put the family back in control of what kind of activities, and we realized real quickly that it wasn't the children and the youth always making the decisions, it was the mom and dad. And so if we could get the mom and dad to really think about those decisions and how it impacted their mission for their family, that we had a better chance of helping them gain control and putting those Christian principles back at the forefront of their family life.
You know, and I can remember real clearly, I'm in seminary, Ben, and my daughter is about in fourth grade, and I'm always lecturing her and everybody I could about, you know, witnessing to Jesus. And so there was a little girl, a playmate of my daughter, who had a terrible family life. And so she's telling me, you know, Dad, I'd like to bring her to Sunday school and church. And I'm like, no. And my daughter's like, well, why? Well, you know, Jamie just will not be the kind of person that will that will do well. And I'm trying to, you know, put it in words, not tell her that I think we're going to get in trouble by bringing her. And she's, come on, Dad, you've been telling me. So, okay. The first Sunday we take her, I'm leading a Bible study group, and all of a sudden I'm interrupted by the Sunday school superintendent who says, you've got to come now. This little girl that you brought has tried to sexually molest a guy in the bathroom, and I'm so embarrassed. And I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm never bringing this girl again. And my daughter looks at me and said, so that's the kind of Jesus you have, Dad. One strike and you're out. I'd like to die. And long story short, my daughter just kept hounding me. Dad, you've told me to witness, and why are you going back on that? And so we kept taking her. And you would not believe, well, you would believe, Ben, the change that Jesus did in this young person's life. Her parents would be dead to the world early Sunday morning, cavorting all the night before, and Jamie would get up and dress herself. And after a while, she got to love church so much. And my daughter taught me so much, my daughter and Jamie, that, you know, if you're going to have that as a mission, you're going to have that as a mission, and God bless that. And that kind of coincides with your story. So I think we're hitting here on something that if you really believe this, I think that God's going to take you up on it, and it's not going to go easy, but you're going to be committed, and he's going to bless it. I'm thinking, too, Ben, of the great story, one of my favorites, and, you know, the movie doesn't do the facts total justice, but it's pretty close. The famous Olympic runner, Eric Liddell, who refuses to run a qualifying heat at the London Olympics because of his faith. He says, you know, Sunday's for the Lord. I'm not running that day. And they try everything, even threatening with the Prime Minister of Great Britain. And he says, not going to do it. And, you know, what a message to the rest of the world and to the faithful about what's important for us and for our families and priorities. And so I think, would you agree that extracurricular activities and how they enter into a family life is a beautiful thing, not only for the family, but for everybody else that observes it, even over history?
I think you can, and I think you're right. I wouldn't disagree with you at all, except I think that the problem that families face is the question whether or not they're living by default. That means I'm letting life happen to me, so these extracurriculars happen just without much forethought or much planning. Mm-hmm. So I just sign my kids up, and then I complain about it later and how much of an imposition that becomes on my life. Or I'm living my life deliberately, which means I take responsibility for my life and I own my own failures and successes. And so as families begin to regain control of their life and as they begin to have mission statements, they begin to make deliberate decisions about whether or not this particular activity or that particular activity is appropriate. And they begin to see how it fits into, like for a Christian mission statement, how it fits into the faith development of the child or the academic development. I've seen a lot of families live by default and get really frustrated. I've seen a lot of families who are very deliberate about their the activities they enroll their children in and are very happy, and because it's helping them move towards something they value and cherish. And so I think the difference between being happy about extracurricular activities and unhappy as a family is whether or not it is deliberately decided and it fits into the plan that I have for my life and my family, and especially about the plan that God has for us as God's people.
So I think you've just answered a question that I thought would be a very good one. For the family that's overextended and over their heads in extracurricular activities, that is, they're tired, they're frustrated, they're concerned about their children, I hear you saying that the first step should be to start to take control and say, you know, what do we want to be as a family? You called it a family mission statement. What's important and vital for us? And then start selecting things and be discreet from that point on.
Absolutely. And once we figure out what's best for our family and how we want to manage it as our family leaders, because moms and dads are given the responsibility to do that. The second thing is to look at our children's giftedness and to help them shape that giftedness. And rather than, like you said before, me living out my fantasies or my desires through my children, is really being attentive to what God's gifted our children with and letting that become something that we're trying to shape and grow. And I think all of a sudden it brings peace to the activities in our life.
Good. Do you have any thoughts at all, Ben, on what age parents should allow their kids to begin serious, you know, activity and participation in extracurricular activities?
Well, I think it's really individually. I think that it depends on the activity. It depends on the goal of the activity. It depends on the child, again, and whether or not that activity really helps us move toward what our mission in life is. I know that there's new research out right now that's saying, you know, it might be better to let the child develop a little more physically before we get them too involved in a lot of aggressive activity, because it might be unhealthy for them. Another research is talking about a child being too involved in one thing for too long. It might wear out some of the parts. For instance, if the research is beginning to pile up on, like, if I have my daughter or my son go into golf at the age of 8, and all they do is really focus on that golf, maybe by the time they're 30, the body's parts that are repetitious in using that golf swing might be worn out. So it might be better to have an approach that's more varied. Play sports, okay, I'm going to play volleyball, and I'm going to play softball, and at a younger age, maybe give them a lot of opportunity to explore, and therefore it might be even physically more healthy for the child. So the question about what age starts, it really depends on the activity and what's appropriate, and how much to do depends on what's really physically healthy for the child.
And is it a healthy thing for parents maybe to work with their children to show them the whole gamut of extracurricular activities that are open to them out there, and they might do some exploring with them? You know, you're talking about robotics group and art and drama and dance and music, all those things that are out there today for our young people. Just an entire swath of good things to let the child explore.
Yeah, I would think that would be very healthy. In fact, I would do it another way. I would say, okay, we're going to do maybe one or two activities this spring, and there's 10 to choose from. Which ones would you like to do this time? And they pick that one or two depending on the capacity of the family and the capacity of the child. And maybe the next fall, they get another menu, and it's another whole different things, which might not just be athletics, but like you say, robotics or other things. But to limit the number and to vary the opportunities, I think that's healthy, especially at the beginning of a young person's life, to get them to explore many, many things and see what they are gifted at and what God can do through them.
Excellent ideas. How do you help children build good time management skills as they get up into, you know, the age groups where they and their friends can, you know, get mobility with, start to driving themselves around, don't need the mom and dad taxi service anymore? How do you go about helping them be good time managers?
Well, the time management is just a skill. I mean, it is a skill that you learn, and it's a skill that, first of all, would be needed to be modeled by their parents. I know my granddaughter, we were with her this last weekend, and she's in the fourth grade, and now she's already got her planner out, and she's looking at how much each activity is going to cost her, and she puts it on her planner, and there's a limit to how much she can put on that planner, and that helps her begin to think about her choices. So I think early you begin helping a child learn the skills of time management. And again, that's another way the church could really support the family by offering some of these skill-based classes where parents and their children can come together and through a little seminar learn how to do that together. And that'd be a real benefit and a real service to families in the church.
That's a great idea that, you know, some of the parents and their kids that have found some good techniques and some good resources could do some leading and sharing and discussing. You know, I'll never forget that I think I was about fifth grader. I was, you know, a starter on the basketball team at school, and we made it all the way to the playoffs. And at the same time, I told my dad I wanted to become a musician, and he was reluctant to let me get into it. I wasn't sure I could carry the load. And I promised him, if you buy me this instrument and these lessons, I'm going to do it. And lo and behold, I hadn't checked off the practice for a couple of days on the refrigerator checklist. And he came in and he showed me that. And he said, so Rod, Wednesday night, when you have this basketball thing scheduled, you're not doing basketball, you're doing music. And it was a game. It's a tournament game. And my dad said, well, you've made a bad decision, Rod, and you're going to have to do your music because I'm not letting your band and your music teacher down. And they like to tell the story that that night when I practice and I would play for a while and then cry for a while and then play for a while. And yeah, I guess it was quite the sound coming up. But I'll tell you what, I learned a lot. I learned that I'd never again say to my dad, I promised to do something if I didn't intend to do it, because my dad was going to follow through. And he really taught me perseverance. The hard way. I let my team down, let myself down, but I learned a lot, great lessons in there to be learned by parents that worked that through. And I remember the kind hand of my dad after that, talking to me about what I'd learned and carried on in life. And, you know, there's so many good things to be gained from a family here, from all these lessons and working together, is there not?
Yeah, and what you're describing is your dad as an effective parent, helping. Our job isn't to our kids to always like us or to give our kids what they want. Our job is to shape their lives so they can be productive and effective adults. And one of those skills is time management, getting in on, you know, helping them be ready for their job when they get out there in the world. And it really starts at home. But I'm not sure parents always are equipped to be that kind of a parent, that manager of our children. And it takes some tough calls, you know?
Yeah, it takes a real tough love.
Well, it's just, you know, we want our kids to succeed too, right? So as parents, it's a little scary when we say, you can't go to the game today.
That music means I have managed my time well. So Ben Freudenberg, thanks for being our guest today. God's blessings to all the good people there, Concordia Ann Arbor.
Thank you. God bless you.
Turn in tomorrow, I mean Monday, when we will look at life issues next week with Andy Bates, your regular host here on Faith and Family.